ദ ഔട്ട്കാസ്റ്റ്, ശരൺകുമാർ ലിംബാലെ. ഇൻട്രൊഡക്ഷൻ. ശരൺകുമാർ ലിംബാലെ ഈസ് എ മഹാരാഷ്ട്രിയൻ ഓതർ, പോയറ്റ് ആൻഡ് ലിറ്റററി ക്രിട്ടിക്. ആസ് ഹി ഹിംസെൽഫ് ഡിസ്ക്രൈബ്സ്, ഐ ആം എൻ അക്കർമാഷി ഹാഫ് കാസ്റ്റ്. ഐ ആം കണ്ടംഡ്, ബ്രാൻഡഡ്, ഇല്ലെജിറ്റിമേറ്റ്. ഹി വാസ് ബോൺ ആസ് ദ ഇല്ലെജിറ്റിമേറ്റ് സൺ ഓഫ് എ ഹൈ കാസ്റ്റ് പാട്ടീൽ ഹൻവന്ത ലിംബാലെ ആൻഡ് എ പൂവർ, ലാൻഡ്ലെസ്, അൺടച്ചബിൾ മദർ. മാസാമായി, എ ദളിത് വുമൺ ഹു വാസ് മാരി ടു ഇദൽ കാംലെ ഇൻ സോളാപ്പൂർ. ആസ് എ റിസൾട്ട്, ശരൺകുമാർ നൈദർ ബിലോങ്സ് ടു മെഹർ കമ്മ്യൂണിറ്റി നോർ ദ മറാത്ത കാസ്റ്റ്. ഹി ഈസ് എൻ അക്കർമാഷി, എൻ ഔട്ട് കാസ്റ്റ്. ഹി ഹാഡ് ഹിസ് എഡ്യൂക്കേഷൻ ഫ്രം ഗ്രാമീൺ വിദ്യാ വികാസ് വിദ്യാലയ് ചാപ്പാലാഗോൺ സോളാപ്പൂർ ആൻഡ് ശിവാജി യൂണിവേഴ്സിറ്റി കോലാപ്പൂർ. മിസ്റ്റർ ലിംബാലെ വർക്ക്ഡ് ആസ് എ ടെലിഫോൺ ഓപ്പറേറ്റർ ഇൻ ദ പോസ്റ്റൽ ആൻഡ് ടെലഗ്രാഫ് ഡിപ്പാർട്ട്മെൻറ്റ് and an announcer in All India Radio, Solapur, before getting appointed as assistant editor and reader, respectively at Yeshwantrao Chavan Maharashtra Open University. After retiring as the regional director of Pune region of YCM University, he has been committedly working towards the uplift of the Dalit people. About his vocation as a writer and activist, he once said, "For me and for other Dalit writers, writing is a form of rebellion. Our protest is both on streets and on paper. My words are my weapons." In Akkarmashi, which literally means impure of blood, Limbale describes his pathetic situation of not having an identity, a home, or a place of belonging. The Outcast is about an untouchable family in general and community struggles in particular. It reflects the conditions of the Mahas, an oppressed caste, about half a century back, and gives a true and realistic picture of the darker side of the Indian society. The best way to find out the sufferings of the Dalits and other marginalized section is through the words and emotions of those who have lived through the experience and who have the education and talent to write so vividly about it. The present extract, noted for its employment of pathos, is the anger-filled narration of an incident of caste discrimination and humiliation that the Dalit children faced during their school life. Text. One day, all the boys and girls from our school were going on a picnic, but we, the Mahar boys, did not know this and so had come to school as usual, our school bags on our backs. Then our teacher asked us also to go back and get our tiffin. Excited at the thought of being out of school, we ran home like oxen in a race on the clear day. We returned with our jowar bakri and chutney tied up in dirty rag and joined the group of boys and girls who were standing in rows. Just then, Bivarabai appeared, gripping the stalk of a dry jowar plant. Roughly, she pulled Parsha from his row, making him cry. Bivarabai dragged him off. Parsha wanted to go on the picnic with us, but Bivarabai wouldn't let him. "Parsha, follow me, or I will kick you. Your father has left to dig pits without eating anything. You must take his food to him, or he will starve for the whole day. He will chop you into pieces when he returns. Come along." Bivarabai was very annoyed at Parsha and she lashed his back, abusing him. It felt strange to be moving with all the teachers, boys and girls in a single group. Women gathering dry dung cakes watched us admiringly. We were excited. Harya, who was grazing cattle along the banks of the stream, looked restless. His father had taken him away from school and put him to work grazing cattle. Harya was employed on Grimalaya's farm. For his hard work, he received food and 100 rupees a year. Harya's mother didn't even have proper clothes. Most of the time, everyone in his house was only half fed. Now that Harya started working, he was no longer a burden, but an asset to the family. The question of his bread was solved. There would be his pay at the end of every year. Clothes could be bought now for everyone in the house with that money. As we all passed by in rows, Harya, astride a buffalo, was singing. The tough boys of the group went up the trees and other boys and girls ran about all over the place. The girls played Pugadi, their teachers card games. There was great fun and excitement. Too young to participate, I merely watched them from a distance, admiring them as those dung-gathering women had admired us. The Vani and Brahmin boys played Kabaddi. Being marked as Mahar, we couldn't join them. So Malya, Umriya, Pashya, all from my caste began to play touch and go. We played one kind of game, while the high caste village boys played another. The two games were played separately like two separate whirlwinds. Play over, we settled down to eat. Boys and girls from the high caste like Vani, Brahmin, Marwari, Muslim, Maratha, Teli, Fisherman, Goldsmith, and all the teachers, about 100 or so, sat in a circle under a banyan tree. We, the Mahar boys and girls, were asked to sit under another tree. The high caste once said a prayer before eating, which didn't make any sense to us. Parsha didn't even have a piece of cloth to tie up his food in, so his bakaris were tied up with mine. Malya had brought bombil fish, Umbaria had brought only bakari and no chutney. We opened our bundles. The high caste children offered their food to our teachers. Theirs was a variety of fried and tasty food. Even the tree we sat under was tattered like us. Whenever the wind shook its branches, it produced waves of hot air that hit our faces. We sat in its broken shadow. Malya offered his bombil fish curry, and in exchange, we offered him our dry bakari as he had not brought any. Dare I offer my chutney bakari to my teacher? Would he eat it? Bakaris of the high caste were, of course, of a better quality. Their mothers had given them fried food, whereas we had just pieces of dry bakaris, which were hardly enough to satisfy the cave of hunger. My stomach was like a way to the graveyard that continuously swallows the dead. My mother, Masa Mai, used to shout angrily, "What is it you have? A stomach or a kalkot? There seems to be a gizzard in your stomach. Why don't you go around with a big bowl at your mouth?" I always felt half fed. Whatever was given, I ate greedily, and nothing was ever enough. Everyone in my house needed food, so how could I alone thinking of eating till I was full? I had searched for every bit of leftover food in the house to make up my tiffin. I felt I had swallowed the whole land and was chewing stones. The high caste girls from our village offered us their curry and bakaris without touching us. The thought that they might have seen our food upset me. I was ashamed of my food and felt guilty eating it. The high caste boys and girls from the village were eating together. The girls sat close to the teachers. They were all chatting, and we sat like owls watching them. We had before us only the crumbs of bombil. With each morsel, I chewed the lips of laughing girls. At last, we finished eating. The teacher asked the high caste boys and girls to color the leftovers on a piece of paper and give it to us. I and Parsha carried the bundle of leftover food on the way back. The high caste boys and girls were laughing and joking, but our whole attention was on the bundle. Malya carried a bundle of bakari on his head, and we, the Mahar boys, followed him excitedly like hungry vultures. At last, we gathered in Grimalia's farm and opened the bundle. It contained crumbs of different kind of food, and their spicy smell filled in the air. We squatted in a circle and stuffed ourselves greedily. We had never tasted food like that before. We were all really gluttonous. Our stomachs were greedy as a beggar's sack. When I got home, I told my mother all this. Like the victim of a famine, she said, "Why didn't you get at least a small portion of it for me? Leftover food is nectar." Her words made Grimalia's firm quiver in my stomach. When I went to school the next day, the teacher had already asked the boys and girls to write an essay on the picnic. The students of the 7th form in particular were busy writing the essay. Although I was only in the third form, the teacher had asked us also to write. Both the classes were run in the same room. While the senior boys and girls wrote swiftly, I sat worrying. When the teacher noticed me apparently doing nothing, he grew annoyed and shouted, "You son of bitch, come on, start writing. You like eating an ox, don't you?" I picked up my slate and pencil, spat on the slate, smeared it, and wiped the slate with my shirt, which was already dirty, having been used like this so many times before. I didn't know how and what to write. I kept thinking of how we squatted in a circle under a tree in the forest, eating. I remembered the hands of high-caste boys and girls offering us their leftovers, the withered trees in whose shade we sat, the bundle of leftovers, the question my mother had asked, and the teacher calling me a son of bitch and a beef eater. How should I start writing the essay my teacher had asked for?